Welcome back to Life Matters. Tom Gardner with Gardner, Koch, Weisberg, and Rona, the law firm, joins us this morning. Good morning, Tom.
Hi, how are you?
Good morning.
We're good. Well, actually,
aggravated.
Right. Me as a citizen and
a
Tom as a police officer, and I have a feeling you as an attorney, and specifically any defense attorneys that are in your office, are going to be pretty upset, or we all are already upset.
Well,
about
that's why we have the plexiglass between Tom and I.
Oh.
So we can't hit each other.
Yeah, but I think you guys are going to be on the same page on this one.
No, I think we're going to agree, definitely.
Beginning January 1st, Illinois non-detainable offenses, which, Tom, would you just explain, Tom Giovannone. God, you're both Tom G. I can't even get, what is happening here? explain what that means, non-detainable offense. What does this now mean?
It means that if you commit one of these heinous crimes,
which we will list in a minute,
you don't go to jail. I mean, you may get booked into the jail as part of the arrest process.
It's cashless bond.
Yeah, it's cashless bond. They're just going to sign you out.
On your signature.
Right.
Which means you have no nut in the game now because
it's a signature bond.
Right. It's not going to cost you anything.
You're not putting anything up. Nothing's on the line.
Right.
You just simply walk away. So if, I don't know, you beat your wife half to death, you're probably going to be out in a few minutes to do it again.
Tom Gardner. So we're joking because I said we're aggravated because three of these are aggravated. Aggravated battery, aggravated DUI, aggravated fleeing. And I said, what is the difference? Like aggravated. I'm aggravated, so I'm going to flee. Like this is not. And then they laughed because I am not a lawyer. I just play one on the radio. So, Tom, what are these? So I'm going to list these offenses that you now do not have to post bail in order to get out of jail. Aggravated battery, aggravated DUI, aggravated fleeing, arson, burglary, drug-induced homicide. You know, another word for homicide is murder.
Right, it's the better word.
Right. Intimidation, kidnapping, robbery, second-degree murder, and threatening a public official. So you go commit second-degree murder, and you do not have to post bail.
No, you can go down to the Dairy Ripple a couple hours after you're arrested and have an ice cream cone.
Tom Gardner, how does this... Now, this remember, this is in Illinois.
Right.
This starts January 1st, 2023. How does this... First of all, do you see this as being productive? And second of all, how in the world are defense attorneys supposed to do their jobs when their clients don't have to stick around to find out what happens to them? I mean, all this does is encourage you do
doing
the crime,
you
are not going to do any time because they're never going to see you again.
Well, I don't know if that's necessarily true. It depends on the offense. It depends on the individual. It depends on the family. So, you know, I understand the idea behind the law, right? It's viewed as a reform law, because the feeling was that the easiest decision for a judge was always to keep somebody locked up or to set a high bail, right? So from the judge's perspective, elected judges in Illinois, the perspective is, how do I not just protect society, but should I take any risk, right? So experienced judges will take more risks than inexperienced judges.
Right.
But the perception, I think, was that the bonds were set too high for cases where they shouldn't be set that high. And so one of the concerns also was that the bond system disproportionately impacted the poor, right? Because if you get a $100,000 bond, let's say $1 million bond, and you committed murder, and you're a rich kid, then the family says, well, okay, we want little Johnny out despite what he did. Here's $1 million. But if it's a kid whose family doesn't have any money, then that kid sits in jail. So that's the reason for the law. Now, whether the law goes too far is a different issue.
Right.
But you have plenty of people that spend time in prison because they can't, or in jail, basically, awaiting trial because they can't make bond. So I think I understand the reform element of it.
Right.
But it depends on which crimes it should apply to.
Right.
Well, and then we go the other way. So we have a gentleman that is involved in a domestic violence with his wife, hits her with his car. He's released on a $1,000 cash bond, which isn't that much money, and goes and kills six people in a Christmas parade. And that is actually more stringent than this no cash bond.
I mean,
so I understand what you're saying. And yeah, there is a level of ridiculousness to some of these extremely high bonds, but why are you locked up?
Right.
You know, he runs his wife over with a car. That's attempted homicide with a motor vehicle. Why should he be out, especially on a $1,000 cash bond?
And I think that what people like me, we look at this and say, well, wait a minute. Is second degree murder? What do you have to do to be charged with second degree murder? What is the difference between first and second degree murder?
It would be more like involuntary manslaughter or something where there isn't a degree of intent, as high a degree of intent. You know, as opposed to just firing a weapon, there could be, you could be involved in some other offense or whatever. I think that involuntary manslaughter was the old designation, so it's a step below straight murder.
Okay.
I agree with you on that, but I'm not sure how Illinois looks at it.
Right.
It's a lesser degree.
Yes.
I mean, murder is murder, but there's someone that's going out, and that's their goal, is to kill somebody, and then there's somebody that does something stupid. It may not be your intent to commit that murder, but it happens. And that's where you get your different degrees of murder. But again, I don't know exactly where Illinois is.
So somebody kidnaps me.
Mm-hmm.
I get away. They get arrested, and they get right back out.
Yeah,
somebody kidnaps a 5-year-old.
Same thing.
They get caught. They get right back out. I mean, I guess...
I don't see things improving in Illinois with this.
Well,
I mean, it's already out of control.
Shockingly, they have nowhere to go but up.
Right,
but I think you're right. I think they're going
to... I think we need to quit worrying about the criminal as much as we should be worrying about the victims and
right.
the families. Because this is just putting criminals back on the street.
Right.
So I think that the issue here is really the offenses. Because you
right.
could have somebody in on a drug offense where the bond is $5,000.
Mm-hmm.
Who says, I don't have $5,000,
right.
and they sit there for 2 years. Or during COVID, people were sitting for 3-4 years sometimes because their case was in process, then it got delayed, and, you know, the Chicago court systems were basically shut down.
Mm-hmm.
So those offenses, that makes sense. When you get with the more serious ones, doesn't make as much sense. Now, I would say, you know, I was an assistant state's attorney and headed up a group of lawyers in the state's attorney's office in Cook County. I was there for 6.5 years, and I, you know, I'm licensed in Illinois. I've been
right.
licensed there, and I've done plenty of cases there. You know, the judges, what this is doing is taking the discretion away from the judge. So the arguments Tom's making would be arguments the state's attorney would be making to the judge, saying, well, wait a minute. You kidnapping of a kid, you can't let this person back out.
Right.
And the legislature is taking that discretion away from the judge on offenses. So I understand why there's a concern there.
Doesn't this make a defense attorney's job harder? I mean, somebody gets arrested for, you know, like we said, kidnapping. They get straight back out of jail, no bond. What makes them have to come back to court?
Well, I think that you'll find, according to studies, most people come back to court.
Without bail?
Yes. Most people will come back to court because they're in the system, they know they can get rearrested, etc. They'll come back to court on the regular offenses, right?
Right.
If you're dealing with an offense that's a Class X felony or a serious offense where you have a minimum amount of time that you'll do, 6 years if you get convicted.
Right.
Then I think people start to do a calculation.
Right. Right.
And they say, well, maybe I won't show back up in court.
Right.
So now what this does in taking the bat out of the hands of the judges is it also takes the judges kind of off the hook in a way. I mean, the fault, if that happens, is not mm-hmm. the judge's fault. The judge could say, on the record, he could just say, you know, under these circumstances, I'm not comfortable not having a bond here.
Right.
Or there should be no bond or something like that. Or such a right. high bond, it's effectively a no bond.
Right.
But now the judge can't even do that. So I can picture judges in the situation you're talking about, Tom, or you're talking about, Nancy, I can picture the judges saying, on the record, I wouldn't grant bond here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I wouldn't let them out without bond.
Right.
And now they do.
Right.
So I think you're going to have judges have a problem with this.
Well, yeah, I don't think it's going to deter people from committing crimes because they can get away. And I don't necessarily agree with you on people showing up. When you're... It's all going to be dependent on charges in person, but I know for a fact when we're dealing with illegal immigrants, excuse me.
Of course.
Oh. If they're released, they're in the wind. They're gone.
Right.
You will never find them again unless they're arrested somewhere else and they get fingerprints because they have new identity, new names. They'll go back to Mexico. They'll go to wherever.
Right.
And they disappear. I don't disagree with you on ridiculous bonds. I think they should reflect the crime. If somebody is arrested for possession of marijuana, it's a drug, it's illegal, I get it. I don't think it's something that should be treated the same as heroin or meth or something like that. You know, there's different degrees of it. But we can't do this across the board. Every case should be taken individually, and it should reflect the incident that occurred. You know, when we start treating bond as a blanket, we got problems. And that was proven in Milwaukee or Waukesha. I fear for Illinois. I think their crime rate is going to go through the roof. As soon as criminals realize, number one, they're not keeping me.
Mm-hmm.
What's stopping me from shooting this guy? Or what's stopping me from robbing that liquor store? Whatever.
And I guess that's where I'm coming from is that, Tom, I think you're right. On some of these cases, of course, they'll come back because maybe it was an accident, you know, like, you know, whatever. You know, it truly was not. But the ones that are going to recommit crimes or commit a different crime, they're never going to are they really going to show back up? I mean, do you really think that they're going to show back up because they're lifelong criminals? Like, this just makes it so there's far less deterrent for the hardened criminals. Like you said, I get it. You know, some people probably, hopefully, the majority of people actually have a conscience. And between, you're right, their family influence and friends and their own conscience, they will come back, they will do their time, they will pay the price, and they will hopefully not reoffend. But I'm talking about the reoffenders. This, to me, encourages them to reoffend. And again,
absolutely.
You know, you've got, let's say one of these guys is your client, and do you get assigned these cases? And, you know, like from the court, is your firm part of that system where you have to take
public defenders?
Yeah, the public defenders kind of thing. Okay.
No, we're not part of that at all.
So then how are people, don't they use some of the bond money to pay the public defenders when they say they can't afford their own attorney? Like, how are those people supposed to get paid now?
It goes the other way.
Okay.
So the public defenders get paid by the government, by the Cook County in the case of Chicago offenses.
Okay.
So they are getting paid. They are free to the defendants who don't have assets sufficient to buy a private attorney. To represent them.
Okay.
Where this comes into play is the private attorneys normally get assign the bond for their fees.
Okay.
So the risk then is on, you know, the person who's charged could lose that money.
Okay.
And most of the time, the money's posted by other family members, And so there is a feeling that they need to go to court, and there is an ability to hire a private defense attorney for them to represent them, because there's a bond that's been posted.
Right.
So if there's no bond posted, then there isn't as much of an incentive to have money available for the attorney, because most of the time, number one priority is get the family member out of jail.
Right.
That's more of a priority than who is going to be the defense attorney.
Right.
So this will lead to bad decisions. Right. What will happen is the people that are charged will say, well, I'm going to just stick with the public defender. I'm out.
Right.
And that is often a bad decision.
That and now the taxpayers, because Cook County doesn't get that money on their own.
Mm-hmm.
Cook County gets that money from the taxpayers. So that's another part of it is what now you have no incentive. If a client comes to you, though, and says, I was aggravated, whatever. I'm going to go with second-degree murder here.
So I committed second,
because it's pretty serious. I committed second-degree murder. I did not have to post bond. What incentive, unless he comes in and writes you a big fat check for a retainer, do you have to represent him? Because you don't know if you're going to get paid.
There's no incentive.
Right. So...
Yes.
So lawyers are pretty smart for the most part, right? You don't have many colleagues that are stupid, I'm assuming, who don't understand
business.
Well,
definitely not at his firm.
Right.
Yeah.
So there's zero incentive for private law firms to take on these cases, again, unless this is somebody who's going to write, a pretty substantial check for some pretty substantial amount of time, given the level of... of the crime that's been committed. There's no incentive here for a private law firm to take these defense cases because they don't have any hope of getting paid.
Right.
Which means that more people will be turning to the public defender's office. There's going to be more time, more delays in court, because these people are probably already overwhelmed with those kinds of cases, and the taxpayers pay more. Because the more cases they have, the more attorneys, the more hours, the more taxpayer dollars go toward. Like, this is...
Are you trying to say
talk
this
about
is a
bad
lose,
decisions
lose, lose across the board?
Like, how do you even justify... how do you even justify this? The full circle of it makes no sense whatsoever.
As time has gone on, we're letting people out of prison a lot earlier because... there's too many people in prison. Well, people are in prison for a reason.
Right.
Because they broke the law. So either we need to get bigger prisons, add on to our prisons. Letting them out earlier is not the answer. You're not paying for the crime that you committed. If there's no punishment, why would you change? Louisiana had a horrible problem. Remember during Katrina?
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember what year that was, unfortunately. But... I've seen documentaries on this, where these guys were, residents were being shipped over to Houston and other areas around the country because they get nowhere to live.
Right.
And they're committing crimes, for instance, in Houston's one I'm thinking of, and the criminals are going, man, we're getting locked up for like 40 years here. You kill somebody in New Orleans, you're in prison for 6 months, and they kick you out because it's overpopulated.
Right.
What's stopping them from committing a homicide?
Nothing.
You kill your enemy, you're in for 6 months.
Right.
There's no deterrent there.
Right.
But now in Texas, they're getting locked up for a long time, and some of them facing death penalties.
Right.
Well, that kind of changed things because now it's serious. This isn't serious in Illinois. This is a joke.
Right.
And Wisconsin, I'm afraid, seems to be going that way. Back to Waukesha, $1,000 cash bond for attempted homicide in a domestic violence?
Right.
He never should have got out.
Right.
All those people would still be alive.
Right.
In that parade if he'd have stayed in jail.
So, Tom, what's your take? What's the end game here, do you think, with making these changes?
I think what you'll see is there will be some cases that get notoriety,
mm-hmm.
right? And then the legislature will say, well, maybe it was a bad idea to have offense X.
Maybe.
As like one the way you come by.
Come but isn't it sad, though, that they don't take that lesson from what's already happened?
This happens all the time, though. This is just the course of history, right? There's a concern. There can be an overreaction to the concern. Then the overreaction is kind of looked at, and there's some events with that. Then that gets modified. Same thing with sentencing, right? There's been a pattern throughout the country over the years where first there's give the judge's discretion. Then there's some instances where the judge's discretion is viewed as wrong one way or the other. Then the legislature reacts to that discretion by saying you have to do X, Y, and Z under for these certain offenses.
Right.
And then there are instances where X, Y, and Z sentences don't really fit the offense and people are upset about it. And then it goes back to judge discretion. You know, so to me, within the system, I always favor giving judges discretion because they're the people hearing the cases. I hope that they have enough wisdom to make decisions. They can decide whether or not somebody should be locked up for a long time as a real threat or not. And so I always like to put the faith in the judges to make the decisions because I've seen too many circumstances where it doesn't make sense to lock somebody up forever.
Right.
And other instances where I think, this doesn't make sense to lock this person up for only this. You're going to give probation to this person?
Right.
You know? So I think that discretion is best with the judges. But maybe from a police perspective, that hasn't been good.
Well, of course. We always think we're right. But you know, while you're saying that, I'm thinking, you know, there's actually three sides to this whole thing. You have the defense attorney and the defendant when it is a light sentence or whatever saying, yeah, you made the right decision. And the other side, you got the prosecutors and law enforcement going, this is a horrible decision. Why is it such a light sentence? Or he should have been guilty, whatever the case may be. And then you have the people of the country in the middle going, why are we fighting about this? They should, you know, it just, you're never going to make both sides happy, I guess is where I'm going.
No.
But I think there should be just like a common core, common sense revolving around this. And the stuff listed on here, like one of them, the drug-assisted homicide, I think it was.
Drug-induced.
Drug-induced homicide. I believe that they're talking about somebody who's supplying drugs to somebody and they overdose on them. We have an opioid issue in this country. And nobody can deny that. It's out of control. So if me as a drug dealer, I'm supplying bad heroin, fentanyl-filled heroin, whatever it is, and I shoot somebody up and they die, I just simply go home? That's not a deterrent to our drug problem.
I mean, why? If you're just going to send them home, again, the most serious offenders, I find it very hard to believe that they're going to come back to court without any kind of bond incentive. But okay, whatever. Maybe a couple of them will. Why even bother? Like, why are we wasting the cops' time then? If you're just going to let them right back out
to
reoffend...
Question.
Why don't we have the police then taking care of something else? Because what's the point in arresting them in the first place?
Right. The problem is we have a problem.
Right.
You know, this is hugely out of control. But I think there's a disconnect between what law enforcement is doing and what the judicial system is dealing with. And that's where this stuff comes up with.
Right.
Or where these kind of things come from. It's... Well, let's try and make it easier for the criminal or whatever their goal is. I don't know.
Equity.
But
it's equity, right, Tom? It's equity, right? And I get that, okay? So, you know, but again, there's a difference between an accident and second-degree murder.
Yeah.
I really feel, you know what I mean? And I just think that there are higher level offenses on this list that should not be on this list.
Yeah,
and I think that's where we were going, right?
Yeah, you look at the criteria for granting bond, you know, one of those criteria is, you know, past criminal history and things of that sort. For the granting of bond, the judges can consider that.
Right.
They should consider that. Yeah.
Yeah, they might not. I understand.
Right.
I mean, there's an argument that, you know, at this stage, you're innocent until proven guilty. But the judge has to take into account, will this person likely reappear for court? That's one of the criteria. Will this person, is this person a risk to have out, et cetera, the gravity of the offense and things like that. So I agree with you that those are the issues. You're constraining the judge when you already have criteria to consider.
Right.
And if you look at, when you talk about the drug offenses in particular, and you look at what happens in large metro areas like Chicago, the drug organizations looked at how the offenses were set up, and they said, well, as adults, we shouldn't be selling these drugs. What we should do is recruit to our gang 14 and 15-year-olds, and we'll have them stand on the street corners, and they'll be peddling the drugs because they're going to be in the juvenile justice system, and we're going to be back here running our business enterprise, and we're going to not be the dealer that's going to be in court.
Right.
Right.
So with each change in the law, you always have to worry about what the response will be.
Mm-hmm.
And the response isn't normally just to say, well, okay, I guess this is how things
are. Well, no, you're right. And criminals are not stupid people. They're very intelligent. And those people out on the street selling dope are getting younger and younger because it's easier for them to get away with it.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right about that. I think that some of these gang leaders, operatives of other criminal groups, they could be CEOs.
Oh, God, yes.
Yeah.
If they'd have gone the right way.
Yeah,
right. They'd be very rich and very powerful.
Maybe if they grew up in a different environment or whatever, they are rich and powerful.
Right.
They're just on the bad side.
Right.
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 Yeah.
Right.
It's, and, you know, as much as law enforcement has done to try and squash the gangs, you can't kill them.
No.
They keep coming back, you know. So, yeah, they're very good at what they do. And it is, I hate to say it, but it's a game. You know, who can win the game? And unfortunately, this really is tying the hands of law enforcement and the judicial system. And unfortunately, the people that are going to suffer the most from it are the citizens of the area that it's happening in. You get into the bigger cities where there's higher crime rate and generally more serious crimes, it's easier for those people to disappear because they can just step into the darkness and they're hard to find, you know, and then they can go wherever they go. Well, I fear for Illinois. I think this is just going to make it worse than it already is.
I don't know why the legislature has to intervene in something that the judges already, you know, they already had the ability to use their discretion on. I think you're absolutely right. A judge is looking at the entire case.
Right.
And so basically what this does is these offenders that commit these offenses are now just a file number. It's automatically rubber stamped. Oh, in and out. Oh, in and out. It doesn't matter. You know, it doesn't matter because according to this, the way I see it as well, is if this guy has committed second degree murder or kidnapping several times, that doesn't matter anymore because this is a non-detainable offense now. So if he's done it in the past and his probation is over and all of this, and then he does it again, now he's just, it's a revolving door, in and out. You're not even really, because it's non-detainable. Like, you're not even really detained. It's almost like getting a ticket.
There's going to be a knee-jerk reaction, just like everything else. Remember when domestic violence, mandatory arrest law
Yeah, somebody always had to go to
back
jail.
Back in, like, the late 80s?
Right.
Every time there's a domestic violence call, someone got locked up. Whether they committed a crime or not, they went to jail. You know, it was a knee-jerk reaction by law enforcement. I was, unfortunately, part of that because that's what we were supposed to do. And then it slowly changed to reality of, okay, first of all, we got to find out elements. Is it a domestic relationship? Was a crime committed? You know, all that stuff. But initially, everyone got locked up, which a lot of people got locked up that shouldn't have because a crime wasn't committed or whatever. And I see the same problem with this.
I don't know. What's your end thoughts on this? How do you think this is going to be helpful? Do you think you're going to, what kind of What kind of reaction do you think we're going to see with this?
Well, I think what you're going to see is it will be helpful for some people, and it will be helpful for the many of the offenses that I don't think are included in what we were talking about, the mm-hmm. list here. I think for other offenses, you're going to see the typical cycle where people are going to start to raise questions about whether or not certain of people who are charged with certain offenses with certain backgrounds are being released.
Right.
And that's, I think it will come, that cycle will come back around, just like Tom says with domestic violence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that it's just, and let me ask you really quick an actual legal question. When you put aggravated in front of it, aggravated battery, aggravated DUI, aggravated fleeing, what is, how does that enhance that charge?
It can make it into a Class X felony okay. for some of these offenses. It can make it non-probationable. So aggravated under Illinois law normally means with some weapon.
Okay.
The aggravation is some weapon or some sort of serious harm.
Okay.
So so that's why I think they called attention to this, because the aggravated nature means that's, it's something beyond battery. A normal battery could be just an offensive touching. Mm-hmm. Tom could touch my shoulder,
right.
and that could be a battery. But an aggravated battery is something where you use a weapon in okay. some way to cause a battery.
Right, or level of injury. Wisconsin yeah. goes up to aggravated battery, or not aggravated, great bodily harms.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So if you hit somebody and break an orbital socket or cause them to bleed that needs stitching, whatever, that would be up in great bodily harm.
Okay.
So it depends on, mm-hmm. you know, weapon, injury level. Yeah.
We're talking with Tom Gardner with Gardner, Cook, Weisberg, and Rona, the law firm right here in Lake Geneva. Bottom line is, do you think this is a forward movement or a backward movement?
I think, I understand the direction, because I think a lot of people are locked up. I think the extent of it is not reality.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, that's I think he's such a nice.
I would say though one thing, if the client came in with the check and paid the lawyer, it is so much easier to prepare your case with the client out of jail.
Correct.
And that is a tremendous benefit from my point of view. If somebody mm-hmm. comes in, I have to deal with them in the jail. I can do it. But it's a lot better to have them come in my office. I got staff. I got things we can do. We can spend an extended period of time. We're not confined about what we can bring in. It right. just makes the preparation 100 times better than when you have somebody in jail.
But honestly, how comfortable is your staff having somebody that kidnapped that 5-year-old from the bus stop in your office?
Well, I think it depends on the offense. Most of the time, though, offenses are towards someone
right.
for some reason that has a motive.
Right.
Right. I, as a state's attorney, I always wanted to prove motive.
Right.
So, you know, they're not, the motive wasn't against their lawyer or law firm.
Right.
So I don't generally feel a concern about that.
They're helpful. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I just, you know, yeah. I don't know. I don't work in a law firm. Like, I don't know.
I'm just sitting there thinking, well, you bring a dude in that's been arrested for rape. I'm thinking the ladies in the office are pretty uneasy.
Well, you know, right. I mean, and I get that. I absolutely. On the other side of that, but I see your point is you're an ally to them. You're not the enemy.
Right.
So, you know, they're not going to come in and do bad behavior in front of their attorney, I would hope. Well, and
yeah, you would hope. And we're definitely on opposite sides.
Oh, yes. You
so
two are.
I completely understand what right. Tom's saying, but I'm thinking dark.
But I'm standing back. I'm standing back here, though, as just like a normal citizen, normal human being. And I understand that, you know, the other part of this is that this was already going on. And now you just put it in writing.
Yeah. Yes.
And that's what I, you know, I mean, they were already, especially Cook County. I mean, come on. They're not, they don't have the best reputation for keeping criminals off the street.
Right. But my bigger fear is this migrates north.
Well, yeah.
I don't want to deal with this in Wisconsin.
You got to fix that in November, though. That's all
yeah, we
do
sure do.
That. But I don't know. Bottom line, I don't see this as forward movement. I think that they should be taken on a case-by-case basis. And when you have somebody that cannot meet bail, then you have to take that into consideration. But when you, but this makes it so that it's no longer able to be in, to be taken into consideration, and I think it's and everybody just goes free instead of, because I think are there fewer people that can't afford bail than can? Like, did we solve the wrong problem?
I would say there are lots of people that can't afford bail.
Okay.
If it's kind of in an intermediate category.
Right.
If you have a bail that in terms of cash dollars have to be put down, if it exceeds $10,000-$15,000 bucks, most people cannot do that.
But isn't that the point?
No, the idea was, the general idea is you put money up so that you're likely to come back.
Right.
The idea isn't that you have an amount set and no one can meet it.
Right.
And so that's the problem.
Right.
And that's the problem they were trying to cure. And I do think for many, many families in poorer neighborhoods, et cetera, if you say, come up with $15,000, they'll say, that's impossible.
Right.
You have to be in jail until the trial.
Well, and I think you're right, because it is, I don't want to say subject to interpretation, but what am I looking for? It's subjective to everybody. $1,500 to one person is an enormous amount of money. $15,000 to someone else, okay, well, that's not a problem. So you're absolutely right. But like you said, this takes that discretion away from the judge.
Yes.
And makes it so that now it's just a free for all.
Yeah, I mean, the intermediate
The
intermediate approach on this would be that the policy as to certain offenses, maybe not these offenses, mm-hmm. the policy is to afford someone the opportunity to have bail.
Right.
And then the question is, let the judge determine, as it could be a percentage of their income or something like that, enough to make the judge comfortable that the person will show back up.
Right.
And I agree with Tom. For those people, the most common situation is when, and the most publicized situations that I know of, is where judges have granted bail to someone who has ties to a different country.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And those, then they're saying, well, I'm happy to leave the U.S.
Yep.
anyway.
They'll be gone the next day.
Right. Yeah. Right. I don't know.
Yeah,
I'm stunned.
I mean, we could talk about it all day long.
Right.
It's very unfortunate that this is going through, because I see no positive to it at all.
I like I said, I think we already had the judges that were able to, again, use history, family influence. You know, you get a mom coming in there holding on to that kid's ear saying, oh, don't worry, he's going to be back to court. Because, you know, he's got to deal with me first. Okay. That's probably
good. It would lead you to believe that he'll be there.
I would think so. Right. Right. So, you know, but you get, you know, this makes it so, and correct me if I'm wrong, this makes it so if somebody commits any of these, you know, drug-induced homicide, the judge cannot impose bail.
That's the way I understand it. I don't
and
have that law
that
in front of me, but yeah.
Is sad. That is the problem,
right.
Is that we took away the opportunity to hold the people that the judge's instinct is to hold on to.
Right.
And that's the problem, I think.
You can't hardline this stuff, and this is what bothers
me. Yeah, it's
one
case
of the many things
case.
That bothers me about it. Well, if I get arrested for drunk driving first offense tonight, and I have to, you know, post bond.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I gotta cover the tickets. That's one thing. But if I get arrested for my ninth offense of drunk driving tonight, isn't that a hell of a lot different?
Yes.
You know, it's the same violation, same crime.
Are you
crime,
gonna get me
whatever.
Started on that? Are you really gonna get me started on that?
But this to me, it seems like this takes that equation away.
It does.
The history, the criminal history of that person is so important. If this is the first time offense, all right, I can see the things being a little bit lighter, a little bit easier to obtain bond. This cashless bond I don't agree with at all, no matter what the charge is, compared to somebody who has done this repeatedly.
Mm-hmm.
If they're a repeat offender, why would you let them out? They're just going to do it again.
Mm-hmm.
Their history shows that. And it's unfortunate that Illinois has taken that away.
One quick question, Tom, before we go. Do you guys ever represent victims of the of crimes like this? Or how do you think they're going to react to some of these things?
Well, victims are going to be upset.
Yeah. Thanks for that legal advice. Right.
And I think that's where there's going to end up being counterplay to this. So representing victims, we represent victims on the civil side.
Correct.
Sometimes.
Right. Okay.
You know, on the criminal side, the victims come in and there's victim witness, you know, offices that
they're
deal with that.
They're supposed to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are. But the level of assistance might be in question, right?
Right, right.
But they are merely witnesses to the case.
Right.
So I'll occasionally have a client say, I want you involved in this case. It's really important to me. I want to make sure that I can feel comfortable about this. You deal with the state's attorney or the district attorney and make sure things happen right. Or they'll want me to come to court or one of my lawyers to come to court to accompany them because they feel more comfortable that way. But most of the time, I'd say 90% of the time plus, the victims just come to court when the court date is there and when they need to testify.
Right, right. Yeah, and
don't
that's...
Don't get me started on victims.
I know. I know. They don't get the assistance.
No, victims get nothing.
I'm
here
witness
to tell you.
To that.
A victim of a crime, especially a violent crime, or even a... I don't want to say home invasion, but even if someone burglarizes your home, there is no way you're ever going to be fixed, paid back, justified for anything. You're going to have to deal with the pain and suffering. You're going to have to deal with the feeling of violation of either your body or your residence or whatever. You're going to have to deal with the nightmares. You're going to have to deal with
the
all
mental,
the negative
emotional
stuff
is not addressed.
That comes as being a victim. Right. Absolutely. Right. And depending on what crime was committed against that victim, it's intense, the stuff that they have to deal with. No court system, no punishment, nothing is going to fix that. They're stuck with it. And this cashless bond crap, you're just sexually assaulted by a guy and he's out walking the streets the next day.
Mm-hmm.
How does that make you feel?
Right.
That just adds to the pain and suffering they have to deal with.
Right.
And that's unfortunate because the victims never get even.
Right.
Never.
No.
They'll always be the victim.
And that also lends to the lack, you know, all of these things actually circle back to the lack of mental health care.
Absolutely.
In this company, in this country. That a lot of these criminals have not been appropriately counseled in their youth, things like that. I mean, the mental health, this 100% taxes the mental health care professionals even more than they already are in this country. I mean, it's just, it just is. And that's because attitude and all of that and lack of guidance are the reasons why any crime is really committed. I mean, it really is. And so... You know, like, I know you're going to go on, but you got to wait until the next segment. But I mean, this just, I see this as a huge step backwards for so many victims and people and the judges. And I think we just lost a huge amount of confidence in the court being able to decide on a case by case basis because of this law of what should happen to that criminal. Any final thoughts on this? Or
no, I think that taking discretion away from judges is a bad idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They
know
I
what
understand
they're doing.
That the political, the elected officials who enacted this law, though, must have thought that the judges weren't appropriately using their discretion.
But, get new judges. I mean, but don't let the criminals out.
But I think that the judges, though, to put things in perspective, they see thousands of cases.
Right.
And they make decisions on thousands of cases. They have some collective wisdom, and I'd rather put my faith in their collective wisdom rather than the legislature.
Absolutely. Oh, for sure. For sure.
I like the way he put that.
No kidding.
Yep.
That's absolutely right.
Agreed.
That's absolutely right. Well, when we are in need of your collective knowledge and wisdom at the law firm of Gardner, Koch, Weisberg, and Rona, how do we get in touch with you guys?
You can give us a call at 262-812-0864. You can reach us on email. My email address is tgardner@gkwwlaw.com. Our website's gkwwlaw.com, and people can just stop in at 500 Commercial Court in Lake Geneva.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
It's a pleasure.
I know, we never
always
know what we're going to talk about, and I kind of sprung this on you this morning, and you're like, yeah, this will be a great topic, but I think it was a good discussion from three different sides. I really do. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
We'll be right back with more Life Matters right after this on Lake 96.1.